Every Woman is a womanish show about women making a difference and the men by their side. As 50% of the world's population and 52% of eligible U.S. voters, women are not a special interest group, and every woman should work and vote toward nothing less than 50-50 participation in social, political, economic, and environmental arenas. The opinions and views expressed on Every Woman are those of the hosts and guests and do not necessarily represent those of the KKFI board, staff, volunteers, or sponsors of KKFI and the Mid-Coast Radio Project, Incorporated.
Good afternoon. This is Sharon Lockhart with Amy Bell. And we will have on the telephone with us Mike Cadell from Blue Barn Radio, and we'll be discussing some of the craziness that's taken place in the last week and over the last 30 years or so. But before that, we're going to listen to an interview that Amy did this afternoon with a regional conference of the National Organization for Women member.
This is Amy Bell, and I am at the Prairie States Region Conference for the National Organization for Women. And I am here with Jocelyn?
Joycelyn.
And what are you in now? What's your position?
I'm the chair of the Combating Racism Committee at the national level. And I'm also on the Political Action Committee to try to get more women into politics in 2014.
And are there any exciting initiatives coming up?
Well, our president got arrested for demonstrating for the immigration issue about 3 months ago in D.C. So we're working on that. We're working on abortion rights, equal rights, winning lesbian rights, achieving constitutional equality, and what else? Oh, promoting diversity and ending racism is one of our six core priorities.
And you all are committed up to the point of arrest.
That's right. She went to jail for us. So you all need to get off your butt and get busy.
That's fantastic. Is everybody having fun in Kansas City for this conference?
Oh, I think they are. We had some great food here at the shops outside the library. It's awesome food.
Well, thank you very much, and enjoy your conference.
Well, thank you.
Mike, are you online?
No, I'm on phone.
Oh, good. Okay, good to hear you on the phone. We just had a short clip from the Prairie States Regional Conference of the National Organization for Women that Amy bopped into just a little bit before she came down to the radio station. And, of course, the battle goes on. I guess we can call it a battle. Some people call it a war on women, but there seems to be a lot of wars going on. Most recently, I called you because we had such an interesting conversation recently, and I was hoping to have Ann Pritchett on with us too, but she's out of pocket this weekend, so I guess it'll just be you and me and Amy. And I thought it was worth hearing maybe from our side about hate crimes in the United States, and thought maybe you'd have something interesting to share because you're so knowledgeable about what goes on, particularly in the state of Kansas, since, in fact, you have been so closely aligned with the abortion issue with your wife, Dr. Chris.
Yes, and Dr. Chris wants to send her regards. Ironically, you were wanting us to talk about this, and it's her. She is writing under a deadline. I assure you, she's writing under a deadline. And however, this weekend happens to be her birthday, and she gets sort of skittish, my word, because on April 19th, coincidentally, many domestic terrorist actions have taken place around April 19th in the United States, and the extremists, the right wing extremist conditions, from their perspective, it's for good reason in their minds, because this was during the period of the Lexington and Concord during the American Revolution. And
it isn't a coincidence. It's planned.
Well, yes, it is. Yes, many of them are. And this recent shooting in Overland Park is a good example of that. And the activities of the rancher out there in Arizona, all people really they don't get it when it comes to that. The Alfred P. Murray building bombed in Oklahoma City, the raid on Waco during that whole period, and all these things. These are largely fomented by people who consider themselves in a state of rebellion against the federal government, mostly, particularly. But I wanted to thank you for having me on and to talk about this. I love to discuss right-wing domestic terrorism here in the area of Kansas, especially in Missouri, and it manifests itself in many different ways. I'm sad that the occasion of what happened at the Jewish community centers occurred, horrified, but that's an abused word nowadays when it comes to this kind of behavior among our fellow citizens. And I just thank you for having. And I got to say this: KKFI is such a wonderful community service, and the programs I listen to, that I just don't think people in the Kansas City area understand that yet. They're getting it, I hope, because KKFI, you know, whether it's Judy Ansel's Heartland Labor Forum, Tom Clammer's Tell Somebody, or the Community of Reason in the early morning hours of Sunday, all those programs, and yours too, sister, are just so valuable for people in the area, and I'm just so happy to be on. Thank you.
Well, you're quite welcome. And Amy has something that she wants to say.
Well, this shooting at the Jewish Community Center was, you know, it's getting to a point where gun violence isn't shocking to us anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And I was at Guitar Center when the shooting happened, which, if you know where that is, that's at 119th, and it's right on the other side of the Sprint campus from the Jewish Community Center. And I was up there with my 2-year-old son, and we went from Guitar Center to Barnes & Noble, and so we are driving through it, and there's police cars, and there's barricades, and I'm seeing a helicopter. And I was right next door, essentially, when this happened, and I saw these cop cars, and it was recent enough happening that it wasn't on the news yet. There weren't reporting happening yet, and I looked and I said, "Well, I wonder if they have a shooter," because they were barricading. It was just it just strikes me that's.
I'm sorry you had to go
through
that.
That's a
Amy.
Common enough occurrence that I would drive by that and look and go, well, that looks like there's a shooting. To recognize that response as an act of domestic terrorism when you stumble across it in everyday life. And, I mean, we weren't in danger. I'm not saying that I was actually affected by this crisis, but just the reaction that I had before I heard on the news to see these cars there and to see what was going on. I drove right by the community center and thought that it looked like a domestic terrorism situation of some sort. And I shouldn't recognize that. I should not.
I understand what you're saying exactly, that it shouldn't be that easy to figure out, oh my God, somebody's shot somebody.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just happening. Just like the shooter we had on, I guess, largely in the triangle, the Grandview Triangle and 71 Highway. I didn't heard a lot, I think, Friday night or Thursday night about catching someone. Don't know if they really got the right person or not. But, I mean, where's this all going to end, and what is wrong with humanity?
Well, that's a big question, sister.
Yeah.
I think it becomes with people becoming aware. And I'll go back to it again. I know KKFI provides that special stuff. And I'll tell you, Amy, I'm sorry you had to go through that. I really am.
Well, I feel like there's people that went through it much more than I did. I mean, I was just
appalled
at my own response to seeing that more than anything. That I wasn't, you know, it's hard to even describe. I guess we all kind of get confused when things like this are going on.
Yeah. Well, the marginalization of those kind of events happened, you know, in a way, in areas where, excuse me, and forgive me, please, but, you know, in places where many people in our society don't go, there are a lot of oppressed neighborhoods where that kind of violence occurs, gun violence, as you pointed out, the Highway 71 shootings. Not to be too cynical, at the very same time our Kansas legislature is passing open carry laws to supersede county and community gun restrictions. I mean, this is a fact. They're seeking to make open carry possible. I mean, I think a long time ago, people told people from this milieu, political milieu, who I befriended here in North Jefferson County, where I'm calling you from, informed me that their favorite slogan is an armed society is a polite society. Now, I don't seem to see that happening. I strongly suspected that it was crazy before when I was protecting the clinics in several cities here in Kansas, abortion clinics, because I find, take it or leave it, listeners, that many of them are dysfunctional men who are around these clinics, and they seldom bring their wives or their partners, their lovers, to the clinics unless it's some sort of church service going on that they staged out on the perimeter of the clinic. Many of the men who go there that I've researched and some of them I got to know, okay, and they're not all domestic terrorists, but they do have an underlying problem. For instance, they come from a nasty divorce, or they had problems establishing any long-standing relationships with lovers, and a number of commonalities involved in the dysfunctional nature of some of the men who hang around those kind of the abortion clinics, and even the clinics that are not even practicing abortion, there is a problem with male stalkers. I call them stalkers, frankly, and they're not protesters in any real sense of the word. And the dangerous ones, and I'll shut up here in a minute, but the dangerous ones are the ones who, for the media and many misinformed people here in Kansas City and elsewhere, call the lone wolves. I mean, they are wolves. I mean, they come around and stalk, and then they disappear. For instance, some of the I'm not going to mention names for legal purposes, but I don't want you to get sued or me to get sued, but there are men who stalk the clinics at 7th and Central in Kansas City, Kansas, who I would watch and figure out who they were, and they would disappear, and I would eventually find out they popped up on the radar down in Springfield, Missouri, and down there in that area, southwest Missouri. And some of them had done 6 months' time in federal prison because they simply refused to pay taxes and go before a judge and say so. And they would disappear, and they would go into these areas of the country where they felt safe. And if, for lack of better terms, it's, you know, sort of similar to the Sudan or the Sub-Sahara or places in the parts of the world where there's very little law, Somalia or... Well, you get the idea, and that's what's so extremely dangerous about these people. I'm sorry.
So, from what you've seen in communicating with some of these people, are they afraid of the power of the group? I mean,
no.
Are they? I mean, it sounds like when you say they went through a bad divorce and things like that, it seems like there's a lot of fear of the power that women do actually have.
Well, yes. I mean, that's fundamental because of the where of the society we live. But hey, have you seen? Well, I think a grand old guy who I've always sort of respect Jimmy, former President Jimmy Carter, his latest book.
Mm-hmm. Women are the biggest oppressed group in our world.
That's right, Sarah. Go on. Help
yeah.
us out.
Yeah. It's amazing. I have a friend here who's attending this conference at the Prairie States region, and she says she never thought she'd see a man write that book. So she was pretty elated about it. I have not delved into it very much, but it's great that someone has finally said it because everyone is in such a state of denial about women being oppressed. And, you know, we deal with it on a daily basis. We're smart enough to know when we're being, undermined because we're a woman and we had an idea or a thought or a sentence that isn't respected or listened to or, Amy, fill me in here.
I've heard it go so far as to, I've heard people explain the creation story of Adam and Eve, and to say that if Adam had been born from Eve, then women would have had absolute power. That to change the story to make woman come first and have everyone come from woman from the beginning of time would have given them absolute power. And that when, you know, Eve was created from Adam and then gave birth to everybody, that gave a leg up for men to not be taken over entirely by women. I mean, to take that creation story back to the fear that women have so much power through the ability to control their reproductive rights.
And I'm having a hard time controlling. I want to say so badly something relating to that leg up, but I will skip that. Maybe our listeners are smart enough to fill in. But I'm going to let
well,
that
there
pass.
Is a, I mean, Joseph Campbell did a great series of lectures called The History of the Myth and Time, and I can't emphasize enough that you know, to remind listeners that Amy, beg your pardon, but those you're referring to the Bible, a Christian Judeo type interpretation of
well,
the creation.
I'm just talking about how old the fear of the power of women is.
Well, there was
that's
a mill.
The,
there was millions and thousands of years where the women were considered equal, if not more powerful, in mythology. And after all, that's what we're talking about in this sense. So I find that sort of funny that people stop the creation myth at the Bible. I think it predates it much more than that. It's an ancient, wonderful thing, womanhood.
Right. It's about the time of the Bible that women started taking a back seat in the world. And guess who wrote the Bible? Largely men. There's a book by Ruth.
Right.
I mean, you know, you can trace that back pretty easily. Something else you said was leading me to another thought, and I'm losing it.
See, I've always been under the impression that it was less the Bible and more the European custom, because the European peoples were such warring tribes, and the women were essentially prizes. I mean, you look at Vikings, and you look at things like that, and they did when Christianity came into the Western Hemisphere, there was a lot of the chivalry and the taking the mythology and combining it with their new religion and making it very male centric in a European, very European way.
It spread from there, but you know, you've got to think of the Temple of Isis in ancient Egypt. I mean, there are archaeological finds that are quite clear that it was women who were running what many Christians today would call cults and sects. in perhaps in air, in environments that were not, I don't know whether it was environmental or whatever. These are very interesting things to discuss. But I think it has to, I think you're hitting the nails on the head, sister, with it comes down to the change that occurred with male, a patriarchal hierarchy dealing with power and armed violence. And I think that that's where a lot of it comes from. So, I mean, I don't know. It's a pretty deep subject, but we now know that Glenn Miller was not a Glenn Miller is not merely a poor old guy who conducted orchestras back in the 30s and 40s. No. F. Glenn Miller, a.k.a. Cross. You know, as soon as I saw his image on the television, the Kansas City area televisions, I started going through my picture files that I've had for years, and looking for him, and you know, there's several men in those mugshot in those files that I have that look extremely like Glenn Miller. This guy has been around forever, and I mean, I just whether we like it or not, that is just a fact that there are a lot of these kind of men who bother reproductive health care clinics, and they have, and I don't like using the word that they're just crazy. They're not. They're very well organized. They have support groups. I mean, you would be so. Yeah, you should not be surprised at what they do. And I'm just.
Still think they have to feel disenfranchised somehow. Like there's someone else at fault for something they're just not getting.
Right.
Or do they, you know, there's a male consciousness that I think as females, maybe we're all born like equal, maybe at birth. But very soon, little girls learn somehow that they're supposed to be inferior to boys. But I'm sometimes just amazed with the surety with which a man will state an opinion as though it is a fact and that he knows it absolutely. And where I probably never very often am absolutely sure about anything that I say. And I once had a school teacher, by the way, in high school, at Belton High School, who said to believe half of what you see with your own eyes and nothing that you read. Which I try to always remember that, and I know how the media, because it happened to me a long time ago. I was listed as a man on the street, and I was at the comedy piece at the end of it, and they just twisted my words just unbelievably to make me look like a total idiot about voting when I was not old enough to vote because I wasn't 21 years old, and I told them that very plainly, and that I was moving out of the city before the election, so no, I wasn't going to be voting. But they just made me look like an idiot. So I learned back in 1963, long time ago, that you cannot trust what you see in the media because they can cut it and piece it together any way they like.
My first experience with that was just a few years ago when the newspapers were reporting on a situation at the Power and Light District. And it was like this idea that they had to present both sides and they had to give the side of the Power and Light District. But the problem is when you give the side of the corporate entity, it sounds like they found an expert witness fact. And they were just lying, lying, lying.
Or at least editing, I'm sure.
Lying, lying.
The corporate people were lying.
Yeah.
Well, and you know, that's at KKFI, my son-in-law was just in here for the first time in the on-air studio, and he said to me, or to Amy and I, well, who approves what you put on the air? And you know, I told him we had a 7-second delay, that we have very strict guidelines that we have to follow about what we can say and what we can't say, and, you know, the seven deadly words and blah, blah, blah. But he was kind of like, what would keep you from putting on somebody like this Glenn Miller, a.k.a. Cross guy, and giving him airtime. And I said, well, we choose pretty carefully who we want to air, and we wouldn't be about putting any kind of hate speech on the air that was going to be against anyone.
But there's plenty of radio stations
that's
who
right.
would allow
yes,
that.
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
It's up to you, the producers, the people who want to see how far you want to go with that, mm-hmm. of course. And the FCC is quite clear about the profanity and the obscenities, and but really hate, this is you know, this is where do hate crimes cross the border in terms of suppressing free speech? That's a big issue even among law enforcement people, you know?
Well, Mike, can we take a quick break and
come
right back, and I'd like to talk a little bit more about the idea of freedom and hate.
Sure.
Many people in this country tackle some of society's biggest problems without government or institutional help. On Jaws of Justice Radio, Monday at 9 a.m., we talk with Mike Lowe of Bessie's House and Dan Smith of Elios Ministries about helping the homeless in Northeast Kansas City. And you can call in with your questions and comments. Jaws of Justice Radio, Monday, 9 a.m., right after Democracy Now!
This week, making sense of last week's gunfire at two Jewish centers in Kansas.
They really aren't getting much into what they've learned about his motives yet. But I think it's telling, you know, that federal prosecutors say they're pursuing hate charges.
I'm Maureen Fiedler. That's next time on Interfaith Voices.
Tuesday at noon, right after your Fusion Funkmeister.
Are you there, Mike?
Yes.
Jaws of Justice is another great show that I enjoy mm-hmm. listening to on Monday mornings. You mentioned when I emailed you and asked you about being on today that you kind of like to discuss some of the idiosyncrasies among some of these hate, the differences and the likenesses of some of these people you've seen in your work at the clinics, and maybe comparing them to the Cross or Glenn Miller as a character.
Yeah, well, a lot of them we're talking about a time frame of the early 90s through to the year 2001 or two, and a lot of 90% of the protesters outside the perimeter of the clinic's property boundaries usually are nonviolent. They do not openly carry arms, you know, guns and firearms. And I find it notable, for me, I always was sort of endeared to the women who would come around the perimeter because I would visit with them, and they would do things like walk across the driveways and try to, you know, subtly slow down women and men coming in to the clinics. And I would visit with them and find out and scold them, and we usually had a uncomfortable but polite behavioral, you know, list of inappropriate behavior. But with the men, they tended to push the envelope. They would do things like leave boxes outside in the alley that, you know, you didn't know which one of them left it out there. Mm-hmm. And you'd have, you know, and do you call the bomb squad, you know? Mm-hmm. I had one guy in Wichita who left the area, and some federal marshals picked him up, and he had a gun in the van, and he was a felon, a convicted felon. He was not supposed to have a gun in the van. Mm-hmm. He was not even supposed to be in the state, as a matter of fact. And we had men who would come in Winnebagos to Wichita and merely just drive around and around and around the clinic perimeter, just trying to antagonize or intimidate people who were going to be patients or who were the support network around the patient coming in there. And it was this was not incidental. This was routine that went around. And inevitably, it seemed to be the men who were the most
aggressive.
Aggressive about being uncourteous. Mm-hmm. Aggressive about being rude. Mm-hmm. Aggressive about bullying. I like that. You know, this recent trend about combating bullying, I find wonderful. It's really a fresh air in our society, and it can't be said enough that bullying has been the main part of the patriarchy. And I don't want to get into a big philosophical thing, but I'll talk to you about what's around the.
Well, that's not a philosophical thing. Child development is extremely important.
Mm-hmm.
That is a very sensitive area where you are seeing the establishment of the adult personality.
Uh-huh.
And catching this then is going to stop some bullies that are scary guys with guns that...
Oh, you think as children that bullies grow up into being bigger bullies in adulthood if they're allowed to go on with bullying?
Well, really pushing my...
Girls bully just as... How about bullying? Do girls bully as much as boys?
Men are just... I don't know how to explain that. You're really pushing my envelope, my buttons today, sisters. I'm trying to be responsible. It is a whole, you're talking about nurturing, and it's from the time we're boys, you know, we got to throw the most hay bales. Mm-hmm. You have to, it's very competitive. You've got to be the best football player. You've got to hit each other harder.
Well, that's not just a boy thing.
I mean, whether you like it or not, there's a desensitization of men in today's society, totally desensitized to, I mean, if you listen to hate radio, and as Amy pointed out, it's everywhere out there in Kansas City. And, I mean, it's very disconcerting. But once men begin to visit about these issues, in certain respects, they start making amends to the grotesque nature of their bullying that they were raised to succeed in life. And I found that with even some of the more dangerous guys that would hang around the clinics. I thought it was fascinating that Sharon brought up this thing about John Ronson, who is a BBC journalist who's infiltrates these groups. And then, and sort of left no holds barred in sometimes humorous way about what these people are like. Like, you brought up Randy Weaver at Ruby Ridge. I mean, we could talk about some of that if you'd
like. Yeah, let's do. I just listened to this audio book called Them by John Ronson, and I understand he also wrote Men Who Stare at Goats.
Right.
Which is... incredible. I've also downloaded that book to listen to because one of my friends has listened to it and says it's absolutely scary. It's not at all like the movie, which was made into a joke, that it really is frightening. And I find that sometimes our government is something to be frightened of. I don't know. Well, for example, learning that Randy Weaver was just a poor, dumb slob, basically, who was living in the wilderness, and he'd go 70 miles to meet with some Aryan Nation people, and then the feds approached him, to cut off a shotgun for them, and they set him up when he agreed to do it, to cut the barrel 2 inches shorter, and then they said, aha, we got you. Now you have to go spy on these people and tell us. And instead of doing what the feds wanted him to do, he laughed at them. So then my take on the story, you tell me if I'm wrong, is that then they made an example of him and killed his wife and a 10-year-old son and their family dog and holed them up for almost a month in Idaho.
Mm-hmm.
Did I tell that straight?
Yeah, well, that's the essence of it, but factually, really, it was the marshals. I mean, I'm just going to give you what I've heard and have talked to with federal law enforcement officials. The marshals are primarily responsible, not necessarily for setting citizens up, although that seems to happen, doesn't it?
Uh-huh.
But they are responsible for arresting. They carry out the arrest warrants, and they track down fugitives quite efficiently, by the way. What happened at Ruby Ridge was, I've had other federal law enforcement agents say, well, you know, they blew it, and we had to go and clean it up. That's a quote.
Mm-hmm.
And that happened at Waco, And with that outrageous attack that they mishandled. And I'm so happy that I know there's a lot of people who probably would not agree with me, but I'm happy that the Bureau of Land Management down there in Arizona backed off.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was a smart move on their part, not because of the overwhelming force that was being used, but to point out that, you know, that violence isn't always the way. These incidents that have happened in the past, that these people have used as an iconic moment in their history and of their subculture. It turns martyrs into these people, and
right.
And they become. And Randy Weaver, I thought it was humorous what you're describing him as. He's still alive today. He made his settlement, a cash settlement. I'm sorry to be flippant about this, but he had a cash settlement. He recanted many of his more extremist right-wing beliefs about armed violence. And now he's retired and probably, if he's still alive, probably in bad health from smoking so many cigarettes and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But honestly, it was a horrible situation that only got worse when they decided they had to carry out that warrant. Weaver had nowhere to go. His family, the mountainside was totally surrounded. And it triggered with them, one of them shooting an attack dog, a dog that one of their kids let loose, and the dog went and attacked one of their deputy marshals, and they shot the dog, and that triggered the whole series of unfortunate, tragic, violent incidents thereafter. So,
well, one of the things that I see when something like this happens, and even when you're talking about how you recognize the mugshots of Glenn Miller and how you were getting kind of more up close and personal with some of these members of hate groups and extremists, I think a lot of people start saying things like, where was the government surveillance? Maybe we need more government surveillance because we could have caught this guy. And when you hear his story, he is a very obvious choice to be a scary guy. But what do you say to that? What do you say to the people who say that this is evidence that we need more government surveillance, that we need more
oversight?
We've
already got that.
Yeah.
I mean, in the early 90s, in the up to the turn of the century, 21st and 2000, there was a steady move towards, at least in public places like your stoplight cameras, and a steady move towards video surveillance. But one thing I've learned is that basically nothing replaces the gumshoe legwork of finding out identifying who people are that have a pattern of behavior or criminal records, things like that. That's the real work. And Miller, aka Cross, has a huge history. I mean, obviously, the Kansas City audiences are familiar now with the incredible things he's done in the last 20 years, and that he may or may not have been a federal informant at one time. And surveillance is going to happen. At least I don't necessarily agree with it, but it's in public places, and that's part of the commons. And whether we like it or not, I don't think that's going to go away. But I think understanding where people come from, like Miller, Glenn Miller Fox, or Glenn Miller Cross, is a key to that. There's still an unsolved homicide at a clinic in Springfield, Missouri, that occurred on and around the same time period when Dr. Tiller's clinic was dynamited, and around in the mid-80s, and that predates some of my work, but it's common knowledge among law enforcement officials and stuff that these people, you know, get away. No one's been arrested for the homicide in that one clinic in Springfield, or the bombing of Tiller's Dr. Tiller's clinic. It takes a while. It takes a long while for people to develop that. I don't know. Are you saying, Amy, that if they had done more closer surveillance on Miller Cross, Glenn Miller Cross, that it could have been prevented?
Well, I don't think that I was trying to give an opinion at all.
Mm-hmm.
Just that when incidences like this happen, they have a mm-hmm. tendency to be the reason given for pretty extreme laws. And how can we balance that type of thing? I mean, we all have to take our shoes off at the airport because of a nutcase who unsuccessfully tried to have a shoe bomb.
You know, they've loosened up a lot of those rules recently, though. I think the last time I got on an airplane, I could leave my shoes on.
Yeah, but I heard on the news the other day that they're specifically hearing what they call chatter about another shoe bomb attempt.
Oh, dear God. Well, I kind of resent the fact that we've lost so much freedom, and I get really, really concerned. I happen to like, what is his name? Leonard Cohen, and he's got a song,
oh, yeah,
Democracy
Cohen,
is
yeah,
Coming to the
I
USA.
Music, yeah.
And I actually got chills when I discovered that song, and about that time the Occupy movement came along, and I thought, yes, it's really going to happen. Democracy is going to come to the USA. But I lose hope for that democracy more and more all the time. And I see the politicians as both sides not being that different, not doing that much different for us. And I know that's going to cause a lot of rage in some people who might be listening. But it's a true story. They're all bought and paid for. And that's recent laws that have come down, the Supreme Court, and how much money you can spend to get people elected, and the fact that people aren't informed by the media, and so many people are so busy just trying to make a living and trying to survive,
mm-hmm.
they're just totally disengaged from the whole process, and so many people believe their vote doesn't count. And if you don't vote, it doesn't count. But then people say, who do we have to vote for? Give me a candidate. I've got nobody to vote for, so why should I bother?
Well, we've come to the point where we expect moral perfection of a candidate. And if you can find out about some time that they missed paying for a speeding ticket, which so many people in America have done, but to represent us, that's unacceptable. And they just find all these things. And it seems to me like when you want somebody who's perfect, you got to look for somebody who's at least willing to act like they're perfect. And typically, those aren't really great people underneath that perfect veneer.
Well, I assure you that I have tracked people who have become elected politicians, officials in our Kansas state government, who have hung around women's reproductive health care clinics in Topeka, and they are ashamed of themselves. They're not going to stop running for office. They have a constituency that supports them, and they're emboldened about passing laws that are frivolous, unnecessary, and really part and parcel attacks on women's reproductive rights later in life as they leave the clinics and run for office. There are several of them, not a lot, but several, who were hang-around-the-clinic type people who now have become officer, very powerful people who are not in office but who have Governor Brownback's ears. And I find it most remarkable when we are talking about surveillance in public places, at least that's what I'm talking about, that these same people. And I think we have a representative, a female representative in the Johnson County area who recently stated that she just can't understand why they would want cameras in the legislative committee rooms in order to for people on the internet to live stream and watch what's going on in these committee meetings, where they're writing the laws and they're bringing in lobbyists and influencing the writing of their of those laws. She couldn't understand why they would. She didn't like it. She was opposed to it.
Was that Mary Pilcher Cook?
Nope.
Because we can say politicians' names. Politicians are fair game because they're elected officials. So you can share that with our listeners.
Well, Senator Anthony Hensley, the grand old sage and one of the greatest orators for the Kansas Democratic Party, posted the picture on Facebook, and it has went viral, at least in our little petri dish here in the Kansas, with the lab. We're all lab rats for social Darwinistic the Coke empire here for the plutocrats Coke. And it went viral. Senator, just Google Senator Anthony Hensley and Facebook and his that photograph. And I can't, for the life of me, I can't remember. She's a representative. She's not a senator. And and it's a quote directly her. And she's right. I mean, I can't understand it myself, frankly. I mean, they've become legitimate in Kansas. They have a power base. They're in the infrastructure now. In certain ways, I'm sort of struck by the fact that these armed men will still, maybe they're frustrated. Maybe that's why, Glenn Miller, Frank, reacted the way he did. I don't know. He might be dislocated. He came out of the Springfield area, Missouri area, and down in that area in southeast Kansas, there's Virgil Peck, who joked and was picked his joke
Mike,
about
shooting
illegal
immigrants.
Mike, I'm
sorry to interrupt you. We actually have a caller on
like
the line. Would you be willing to take a caller?
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
But before we take that caller, I just want to say a wonderful quote from a co-founder of Citizens for Good Judges. When you turn on the lights, the cockroaches run. That's why we need to watch. That's why we need cameras in those committee hearing rooms and in the Senate and the House. And now we have a caller.
Thank you. Thank you. Great show. This is JP and Shawnee. I'm curious. It seems to me the federal government and the other police enforcement came down and occupied Wall Street with near military suppression. And I'm wondering, it seems to me odd that the BLM backed off on that situation out there where the farmer didn't want to pay the grazing rights and apparently confronted the federal government with armed force. And it just doesn't seem to square out. You know, we have surveillance, but it seems that the government, the surveillance is directed to the left and not to the right. I'll take the response off air.
That's a good comment.
Thank you. Well, one thing that to add to what the caller said, it did disturb me to hear that the right-wing people in Kansas are having the governor's ear right now.
Oh, well, let's see. Well, it's public record. There's a woman named Donna Lipholt who runs a website called Culture Shield Network. And it's a public place, and she's a public officer, a member of a whatever group it is. She was a hang-around-the-clinic type for before she rose through the ranks, supported certain candidates, including Governor Brownback. And now she goes to Lee Summit just a few weeks ago, maybe a couple months ago, Ann Pritchett would know, and calls a meeting, and Governor Brownback, at her beck and call, runs there and talks, and she's calling for revolution in the United States out of a church, I believe in Lee Summit, or no, Leewood?
Oh,
somewhere.
Leewood. Leewood?
I'm not sure. Her name is Donna Lipholt, Culture Shield Network. The dates are still there. Uh-huh. Then she held another one down in Wichita.
Uh-huh.
Donna is not a gun-wielding revolutionary.
Uh-huh.
Let's get this straight.
Yeah.
But she consorted with people in around the Life Advocate mm-hmm. magazine in the mid-90s who were publicly sending petitions out advocating the, quote, justifiable homicide of physicians. And some of their names were on the list. Donna's name was not on the list, but Donna knew many of the people that were on that list.
Uh-huh.
And now she's part of the influential part influencing the infrastructure in Topeka, the state government. And for better or worse, that's just a historical fact. And I'm sure she'll say, oh, you know, they all disavow their known associations, like with Scott Roeder. And, I mean, it's who shot Dr. Tiller. They almost have a public PR bureau that just cranks out this stuff when it happens. Mm-hmm. Well, we had nothing to do with it. We don't know that person. And when you check it out, well, they don't, may not. There's no real evidence that they, how intimately they knew him, but they attended the same meetings, the same type of, get togethers. And I just sort of, well, let it, you know, that's the way it is. I'm sorry. Yeah. I don't know how to.
Do the people that you've seen who are willing to preach hate and preach support of violence, if not outright violence, believe that they are not culpable for the violence because they themselves in action are not violent?
These people are very religious people, and they don't interpret don't interpret what they say as hate. They actually think they're practicing love. I've had them tell. They say that repeatedly, and it's very disconcerting when they still support these kind of social movements that are violent, like the violence, the over 800 incidents of arson, bombings, shootings, killings that went on around women's reproductive clinics in the 80s and 90s. It's very disconcerting for me because, and now they've gained an element of respectability, and I find it an example. I don't know. I think it's changing very quickly, much faster than they want, I'm sure. And it's, things are going to be, I know, I just see it from the public discourse that goes on about this stuff. Well, you could see it even with the your mainstream media there in Kansas City with the way they covered the recent shooting at the Jewish community centers. I see more democracy taking place. And what was the caller's reference to Occupy being military crushed? I'd like to talk about that a little bit, but go ahead. I'm sorry.
You know,
ahead.
What I wanted to say about what he said was he called attention to the fact that they called off their military might because, not maybe because, but this fellow turns out to be a right-winger, and, of course, the Occupy movement was left, and they went in with all kinds of attacks and rubber bullets and what have you, although I don't think any people got killed that I can recall, but there was no show of force or from the Occupy movement either. And this fellow in Nevada, is it, was actually getting ready to do damage or taking shots at people, came out with a large arm, AK-47 or something.
Right. I don't think there were any shots fired, but they were, and a couple of his family members were tasered and one was arrested and brought in. But, we're talking the very, as it reached its peak of, confrontation there in Arizona with Bundy's ranch. But, Bundy himself was, you know, it didn't take much. We live in a world of social media and, Alec Jones on InfoWar was recruiting. People were going there. They were converging. Very similar to what was happening in Waco, Texas during the Branch Davidian tragedy that was mishandled. You know, that's the same type of situation that where they federal officers are feeling surrounded from outside where they have. By the way, they're very sophisticated, speaking of not just social media, where they, these people use it quite adroitly. They also had a drone. They had their own homemade drone that flew over the base camp of the Bureau of Land Management, and their agents flew over them and took photographs and published the photographs on the internet, saying, "Look how many cars or trucks are there, and how many." They had their own drones. Mm-hmm. I thought that. I might throw that over your fire there.
Well, where is Alex Jones on this? Is he supporting the rancher?
Oh, of course. Of sure.
Well, see, I don't know about Alex Jones sometimes.
I don't know about Alex Jones most of the time.
Well, yeah, most of the time I don't either. I probably have an inkling that there is a conspiracy and that we, the little people, are pretty much fried, but, you know.
Yes, but you can be sane.
I hope I'm sane.
And do want to fix these glaring holes in the freedom of democracy that we have right now as a sane person. I mean...
Well, I'm an insane person. I was accused of being... When I first started having to consort with federal law enforcement officials in the early 90s, and believe me, I did not want to do that. I'm an old 60s hippie-yippie type person, okay? And I love those times. But when I had to confront reality, there wasn't enough people to help protect Dr. Chris and her nurses and the properties. And I had to go to him because there were, and I got to tell you this, I was shocked to run into in the squad that I was working with a Jew, a Catholic, really a straight up feminist, male agent. I mean, and, I was struck, even though they were suspicious of me. And I have to throw this actually one of the first, things that, about the, unnecessary prevention. You know, there was, when I first met them, they asked me, have you ever heard of the Environmental Liberation, the Earth Liberation Front, ELF? They were working me, and I thought, what? And I, ELF? What is ELF? Who's ELF, you know? And as early as the early 90s, they were worried about these little anarchist kids that go around and burn up Winnebago parking lots and stuff like that. There is, from our side, sisters and listeners and brothers, we're not the ones with the guns. We're not the ones inciting violence. And I think it's just so funny that they were so fixated on that while there was all these crazy loonies. This was before Oklahoma City went off. These agents are just as, I don't know, they're humans just like us. And they come from diverse backgrounds. Thank goodness they're not all a bunch of white male in black suits with black ties. Like during the days of Hoover. Things are changing incrementally, but they are changing to the better.
Well, Mike, thank you for coming on the show with us today. We've got to wrap it up here. And
okay.
That was a wonderful conversation, and thank you for joining us today.
Okay, and thank you. And it was a pleasure and a privilege.
Blue Barn Radio.
Yes, have fun.
Okay.
All right.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye. And also I'd like to tell our listeners that from the archives, from the Pacifica Archives, 5:30 Wednesday morning will be a special show of music and poetry from 1977. Alice Walker will be sharing some poetry, and that was 5 years before she won the Pulitzer for Color Purple. So that should be a good show to tune into.
And stay tuned for Urban Connections with Donna Wolf. And then guess who's coming to Kansas City?